Today is Wednesday, September 27th. We're going to start on Chapter 6, Information on Bones. All right, page 63 begins our skeletal system. I'm going to pause here and give you guys a moment to write down the five functions on your worksheet. Okay, so our first function of the skeletal system is to provide an internal framework of support. And so when you're thinking about bones, we're thinking not only about strong bones that can provide support for your body, but also bones that have some degree of flexibility. I know that doesn't really sound right for bones to be flexible. I mean, we don't want them to bend on us, but we do need them to be flexible enough to not break when there's torsion, which is like a twisting motion, or a little bit of bending pressure. So, you know, there is a degree of flexibility that our bones need to have in addition to being strong and supportive. Let's see, our next major function is to be a protective device. Let's see, back in lab, very first day, you guys probably talked about body cavities. What is the body cavity on the front side called?
Ventral.
Yeah, ventral. It's got thoracic and domino pelvic. Good. And which one of those provides a bony protection for heart and lungs?
Thoracic,
good. Ribs, that's right. So we've got good bony protection for some of our vital organs, not so much for the others. On the back side, we have the dorsal cavity and what two sub-cavities?
Vertebral and cranial.
Good, yeah, cranial and vertebral, you can call it spinal, and that protects our central nervous system, brain and spinal cord. Okay, so pretty nice bony protection from our skeletal system. So it's really kind of hard to mention movement of your bones without also mentioning what moves them. What moves your bones?
Muscles.
Good. So we do need to remind ourselves that muscles are responsible for moving our bones, and together they help to provide these gross movements that we expect to see. Storage is a big one for our bones. Let's see, on your worksheet, the first thing that we talk about is fat tissue stored inside our bones. And fat tissue is stored in a specific type of marrow. What color marrow?
Yellow.
Yellow, right. So yellow marrow is actually a fatty tissue stored inside your bones. Red marrow is a little different. It's a modified type of adipose tissue. Its job is to make red blood cells, white blood cells, and platelets. So in kids, they have more spaces filled with red bone marrow, but once you get into your later teenage years and into your adult years, we start seeing some of that red marrow being delegated to certain parts of our bodies. So a lot of the spaces in spongy bone and the cavities of our long bones are home to red marrow. All right, so in terms of minerals, what is the most common mineral we store in the bones?
Calcium.
Calcium, good. Where do you get the calcium from?
Food and drinks.
Food and drinks, yes. So dairy products, of course, great source of calcium. Some green leafy vegetables are also great sources of calcium. So we don't naturally make our own calcium. We have to get it or extract it from other things like plants and animals. All right, and then number five, blood cell formation, or the fancy term here is called hematopoiesis. Hematopoiesis is simply the process of making red blood cells, white blood cells, and platelets. And in what type of marrow does this occur?
Red
marrow, yes. So red marrow that's stored inside our bones is going to be responsible for making blood cells. Down near the bottom of your page, there are different sizes and shapes of bone. I'll give you a moment here to jot down these six types. So the first type of bone is called a long bone, and long bones are exactly what they tell you. They're longer than they are wide. So the ratio there means that we have a long shaft, we have ends of those bones, and these are found only in our appendicular skeleton. So where is our appendicular skeleton?
Appendages.
Yeah, arms and legs. Good. So your appendages are your appendicular skeleton. So let's see, starting from the top, we've got humerus and ulna and radius. Not these here in the wrist bones, right? Okay, but these here in the palm are considered long bones. They're called metacarpals, yeah. And then all of these fingers are called
phalanges,
yeah. So basically everything in your arm except for your carpals and the wrist are going to be classified as long bones, okay? In terms of the leg, we've got the femur. What about the two lower leg bones? Good. And then not the tarsals, but then, of course, metatarsals and phalanges. Yeah, all those are long bones. Okay, so long bones are typically supporting a lot of weight. They have to be strong. So they do have a lot of compact bone on the outside surface. And the spongy bone on those long bones is usually put on the ends. And that's where we can absorb shock and reduce friction. But that's not necessarily going to be what's supporting the weight of the bone. That weight is transferred along the shaft because the shaft is actually tougher and stronger and able to support the weight. Short bones are more square or cube-shaped in appearance, and they're found in the wrist as carpals, and they're found in the feet as tarsals. So if you have trouble remembering them and keeping them straight, just remember you drive a car with your carpals, right? Okay, I'm from North Carolina, so I'm a Tar Heel. Tarsals, Tar Heels, that's my little trick for remembering it. But, you know, T for toe and T for tarsal also goes together. Do y'all have any other tricks for keeping it straight? Just memorizing it. Okay. I got to trick myself into remembering stuff, you know.
And the alphabet you think of. I mean, C comes first, then in order of.
That's true. Yeah, alphabetically C, then T. Yep. Flat bones are actually a lie. They're not truly flat like a book. You know, I expect to have a flat bone that's exactly flat like a book, but in reality, they're curved. There's nothing on us that's truly flat. So if you think about your skull bones, they're considered flat, but they're actually curved. Your rib bones are flat bones, but yeah, they're also curved, and so is your sternum. So these bones are built in a particular manner. They're built like a sandwich. What type of bone is on the outside surface?
Compact,
good. And inside?
Spongy.
Spongy, good. So that's what makes them flat bones. They've got this particular structure, and yeah, they are curved, not truly flat in shape. Well, this is kind of the catch-all group of we don't know what to do with you, so we're going to put these bones in the irregular category. Obviously, vertebrae, sacrum, coccyx are great irregular bones. What else should we put here?
Pelvic bones,
yeah.
And some skull bones.
Hyoid, good, yeah. Some skull bones. Scapula is a good one for this category, yeah. So these bones here are particular to your head. They're called sutural bones. You may have heard and you may read in textbooks that we have about 206 bones. And so oftentimes we think, well, we've got 206 bones and that's the end of the story. Well, some of us may have 206, some of us may have 226 bones. It all depends on how many bones are created in other places, like in your sutures and in your joints. So, you know, you recognize this suture running down the middle, right? What's that one called? Sagittal, yeah. And the one that runs right between the frontal bone and parietal bone is called?
Coronal.
Yeah. Look at all of these bones in those sutures. They're technically considered sutural bones because they're in that growth market from where the bones knitted together. So, in babies, that's where the soft spot was. And the other kind of bone here is actually a type of short bone, but it's specifically called a sesamoid bone because of its location. These sesamoid bones also add to that 206 number that we've got. These have tendons or ligaments growing through them and stabilize them in place. You would have no idea that you have these bones unless you have an x-ray. Now, most of us have a very common sesamoid bone,
patella,
kneecap. So I say most of us because not everyone develops one, but it's a common sesamoid bone, weird, right? That you may make by age one. So, pretty cool. Some people don't.
Don't have a knee?
What's that?
They don't have a knee?
They don't have a knee. Well, don't have a kneecap, I guess you would say, but yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So they can bend their knees or stuff?
They can still bend their knees. I guess it's just a protective
that was
device.
Right.
No, they're...
Yeah.
Okay, how about questions on this page? All right, let's see. On page 65, we're going to flip on over one more. Let's take a look at bone anatomy. So when we talk about bones, we oftentimes don't necessarily want to talk about the linea aspera on the femur or the deltoid tuberosity or things of that sort. We maybe don't want to be quite so specific, so we can be rather generic and just talk about the general parts of a bone. So in terms of a diaphysis, we're looking at a shaft or the length of the long bone. So on your worksheet there, number one at the top of the page, that is for the term diaphysis. Another word for diaphysis is shaft. If you break the diaphysis, another way of saying this is we say someone has broken the shaft of the bone. So it's just the length of the bone. You'll notice that diaphysis is actually hollow, and inside that diaphysis is a storage site for bone marrow. If the bone marrow is red in nature, what is the function? Make blood cells, right. And if it's yellow in nature, the job is?
Store
fat, exactly. So when we think about this diaphysis or the shaft of the bone, we think about a medullary or marrow cavity. We think about bone marrow stored inside. And then let's also talk about letter 1B, something called endosteum. That endo prefix tells me where to find it.
Inside.
Inside, good. And also the suffix there, ost, O-S-T-E, tells me what? Bone, so literally inside bone. This is a layer of simple squamous epithelial tissue that lines the inside of your marrow cavity. All right. In case you need that word, what's written there for you, isn't it? Yeah. Number two is for this term, periosteum. And again, let's use those prefixes. What is peri?
Around.
Good. Of course, ost is bone. So this periosteum is anchored to the underlying diaphysis. Periosteum is a layer of protective connective tissue. Also helps us to connect to things like other tendons or ligaments. Okay? So it is through that periosteum that we do find tendons and ligaments growing. Now, if you're thinking about tendons and ligaments, what functions come to mind? Like how joints work, right? Okay, and do you think of tendons and ligaments as being really weak and flexible or really strong? Really strong, yeah. So if you want to have the periosteum stay attached to the underlying bone tissue, you don't want that to separate. So on your sheet there, you may notice something called Sharpey's fibers or perforating fibers. Those fibers anchor your periosteum to underlying bone tissue. That way, when your tendon or ligament gives a pull or a tug on the periosteum, there is less likely a chance for separation to occur. And if you tear a tendon or a ligament, what are you looking at in terms of heal time? very long time, yes. So we don't want to have those parts in particular tear. Probably very painful, yes. So I'm going to give you an analogy as to how those Sharpie fibers work. If you've ever walked in a parking lot and accidentally stepped on somebody's recently spit out chewing gum, oh God, how nasty, right? You pull your shoe up and then you see these strands of chewing gum coming with you. That's how Sharpie's fibers work. They are meant to anchor that periosteum to the underlying bone tissue, and you can walk 10 feet, right, and that chewing gum's going to stretch. Those Sharpie fibers are doing the same. They're trying to keep that periosteum anchored. So the periosteum around the outside of the diaphysis has bone cells called osteoblast and osteoclast. Which one of these is a bone-forming cell? Good, good. So that grows new bone tissue. And in reality, let's go back to our big picture. If you're making your bones grow stronger and you're 25, 45, 85, or even 5 years old, no matter your age, if you're doing something to make your bones grow stronger, they actually grow from the outside surface of this diaphysis. Okay? And so that makes your bones grow just like a tree trunk, wider. Okay, so if you're running, if you're playing, if you're exercising, if you're lifting weights, if you're walking stairs, that kind of stress on those bones is going to make that periosteum and those osteoblasts actually add width, which is great news if you're trying to avoid bone fractures. Okay, and so of course we also have osteoclasts in that periosteum. What are they going to be doing?
They break down
bone. Good. So I think we kind of have the idea that bones are these static parts of our bodies. It's like we have a steel skeleton, and once it's in there, that's it for life. But in reality, your skeleton completely goes through a replacement cycle around 6 times during your lifetime. That means that if you're 18 years old, you've probably already replaced your skeleton once, if not twice. You know, if you've got somebody who's 50 years old, they may have replaced their skeleton like 3 or 4 times by that age. So we're looking at the bone tissue in there constantly going through replacement cycles. So that keeps our bones stronger and healthy. Now, if your osteoblasts are more active than your osteoclast, what is your bone doing? It's growing and building, right. But flip-flop it, if your clasts are more active than your blast, your bones are breaking down. Yeah. So as we get older, you know, guess who's more active?
Osteoclast.
Yeah. So that's why staying active, exercise, having calcium-enriched foods can be helpful if you age and experience excess osteoclast activity. Let's see, number 3 are epiphyses. These are the ends of the bones. So let's talk about a joint for just a minute. Not a smoky bar, but like, let's talk about your knee. Okay, so what bones come together at your knee? Good. The bones that come together at your knee are femur, tibia, fibula. Good. And of course, the kneecaps there, but we're not going to worry about that for right now. So when your bones rub together at your epiphyses, there's an opportunity for us to grind bone against bone. So to keep one bone from literally rubbing against another bone, what covers the ends of these epiphyses?
Cartilage.
Good. Let's see. This is digging back now. What type of cartilage is in your knee joint? Let's see. We had hyaline, fibro, and elastic. Fiber cartilage is in your knee. Elbows, shoulders, fingers, hips is all hyaline. All that's hyaline. The only 2E elastic cartilage locations are epiglottis. Yeah, ear and epiglottis. Good. So besides being in your knee, where else do you find fiber cartilage?
Your
Yeah, vertebral discs in the back, good. So think about old people. They always talk about their knees and their backs hurting. That's where fiber cartilage is found. It's a tougher type of cartilage. So instead of calling it by its particular type, we just do it generically and say because the cartilage is in a joint, we're going to call it articular cartilage. Okay? What does articular mean?
Joint.
Yeah, it connects it together. So it's joint cartilage, exactly. And by the way, articular cartilage could be hyaline. It could be fiber cartilage. You know, so it just depends on where. Something else to consider for these epiphyses, we are looking at mostly spongy bone here. There is a single layer of compact bone going around the outside, but you know what we're looking at here is mostly spongy bone. So this spongy bone all in here is actually spongy in nature, and it's a great shock absorber. That's why we have a lot of it in the ends of our long bones. That shock absorber tendency also relays the stress down here to this compact bone in the shaft or diaphysis. So the shaft is really handling the stress of that long bone. Okay, so what I've got are some real bones. We don't use them in lab much anymore. So, you know, they are very brittle and we don't use them anymore because they fall on the floor, they get broken. But that's actually a good thing because you can see down in the shaft of this particular long bone. So I'll pass this around for you to take a look at. You can see the marrow cavity in here. You may want to feel the compact bone very smooth on the outside surface and then very gently touch that spongy bone. It is very needle-like and you can see open air spaces. When we're talking about red marrow cavity, we're talking about it being stored oftentimes either in the shaft inside that marrow cavity or even in the hollow spaces of that spongy bone. And I'll pass this one around too. This one has some exposed spongy bone that you can feel. So if you've been handling plastic bones in lab, just appreciate that these are actually more lightweight than plastic bones. These are, you know, of course, real ones, and they're not nearly as heavy as those plastic bones from lab. Don't even know if it's in the same person. Oh yeah, and we've got a couple of articulated full body skeletons, and you know they were bought probably back in the 70s. So we're thinking that those are probably something that the company sold for maybe mass graves. That's the rumor, but you know we don't know where they came from. But yeah, these I don't know whose bones those are. I don't think we have real ones here, but on main campus we've got a couple. And how would you like 150 years from now your bones riding around in my bag and my truck? Yeah. And here's another one for you guys to look at.
How long does it take for a bone to fully decompose?
For the bone to decompose? It depends on what the conditions are because it may fossilize. And then it may become stone. So it's the last thing that's going to decompose on anybody.
Because I've always seen like on those crime show pictures and all that's the main thing that they find that is the bones. That the bones take forever.
Yeah. And the soft tissues, everything else, you know, is going to pretty much decay. Yeah. And it depends on the conditions how fast that occurs. So not to make you never eat food again, but you know, if you think about chicken, chicken's got bones too, yeah. So that stuff on the ends of those bones, that stuff we call gristle, that's cartilage. Yeah, I know some people like to eat that, yeah.
I do chew on it when it's seasoned good.
I mean, if it's cooked right, imagine, you know.
It's seasoned.
Yep. Okay, looks like we're down to number 5. Number 5 is a flat plate of hyaline cartilage known as your epiphyseal plate. And that's the word right here, epiphyseal plate. Oh, I'm sorry. 4. Yeah, 4 is articular cartilage. Yeah, 4 is articular cartilage. 5 is epiphyseal plate. This is a really cool looking picture. What you're looking at is the end of a long bone, and you've got two regions of cartilage. You've got the epithelial plate, and you've got this articular cartilage. You can kind of tell from this picture it has a smooth, glassy appearance. This is actually hyaline cartilage in both locations. So this particular long bone is covered with hyaline on the end and a region of hyaline cartilage through that epithelial plate. That region of hyaline cartilage is only available in that epithelial plate up until your mid to late teenage years. After your mid to late teenage years, puberty and sex hormones gives you one last party, okay? That epithelial plate slows down its reproduction, and the epithelial line is what is left behind. So the epithelial line is actually not cartilage. It is number 6, by the way. Epithelial line is number 6. And the epithelial line is just a remnant of where the plate once was. And we tend to see that in people older than ages 18 to 21. It's a pretty cool picture. You've got a really distinctive layer of epithelial plate through here. That's where that hyaline cartilage is located. Tell me what you know about the growth rate for cartilage. Or the repair rate. Don't want to break cartilage, right? Okay, cartilage is a slow grower. It is a slow healer. So if you're talking about growing in that epithelial plate, then you're talking about something that takes 15 years, 18 years on average. Yeah, so you're talking about a child being born at approximately 20 inches long, and then taking the next 15 to 18 years to grow to their maximum height. So that child may tap out and be 5 feet tall, you know, 6 feet, 7 feet, whatever. But the case of those growth plates is a really slow growth rate.
When it
have
growth spurts, what did that do? Like, you know, like how some people have growth spurts, like my boy, he woke up one day, he doesn't even look an inch tall, he's like,
so if they have a growth spurt, then there's probably hormones that are making that divide a little more quickly. And then this zone of ossification right here is laying down bone a little more quickly as well. So it's just speeding up that growth process. That usually occurs around puberty. Yeah. And then that's in. That's it. Yeah, it's all over after puberty, right? That's the end of it. So it's really cool. If you do an x-ray of someone who's younger than, say, around age 15, you can actually see these epithelial plates. These are not bone breaks. These are actually layers of hyaline cartilage in the ends of those bones. They are not meant to be flexible, but if you overstress that epithelial plate, you can cause breaks in the growth plate. What does that mean for your future growth? Yeah, it may not grow right, it may stop, you may be stunted in that particular arm or leg, so we want to avoid, especially in kids who are growing, damaging those epithelial plates. In fact, in this picture, you might be able to see an epithelial plate fracture, like right through here. So if that's a leg bone, that means that one leg may continue to grow normally, and the damaged leg may be stunted.
Like that person had polio or something.
Yeah, walk with a limp, yeah. So in kids, if they're trying to see if they still have potential for growth, they'll do an x-ray of the hand. That's a pretty low invasive way to assess if they've got growth plates still open. On the picture here on the left, you'll notice these are growth plates at those arrows. You'll notice there's a good deal of space between those bones, so there's still room for those bones to grow. But take a look at the picture on the right. These arrows are not pointing at epithelial plates. What instead are they pointing at?
Where
they're connected. Those are lines, and lines are not made up of hyaline cartilage. They're actually just compact bone tissue or spongy bone tissue. So no longer can we see growth occur in this picture on the right. I had a student in class many years ago, and we were talking about growth and all this good stuff. And she comes up after class, and she says to me, I was tested at age 5 for dwarfism. And at age 5, she was wearing like 2T toddler clothes, and her parents were concerned that she was too tiny for her age. So when they tested her, they did this. They took an x-ray, and they told the parents, hey, at age 5, good news, this kid still has room to grow. And so she started getting injections of a hormone. She had those injections until she was age 14, because what happened at age 14 to those epiphyseal plates? Turning the lines, yeah. So they knew that after age 14, they probably should stop giving her growth hormone injections. So that's what they can do, is if they've got a kid who maybe not catching up and growing like they should be, they can look at those x-rays and see if there's still a potential there for growth. So pretty cool stuff. All right, so what do you think? Which picture shows an epiphyseal plate? The right one, yeah. That dark line through there is not a fracture, but rather a growth plate. And on the left, you don't actually see a dark line. It's a white line, so there's no more space in between. Yep. So it's almost like the bone has two pieces. It's got an epiphysis after the plate, and then a diaphysis before the plate. All right. I just wanted to mention that picture is on the test. Okay, the one on the bottom of your page, that's 65. And the label should correspond to the letters back above. Common things I'll ask are epiphysis or diaphysis. You know, look for that epiphyseal plate as being cartilage or line, being bone. What kind of questions do you have so far?
You said the dialysis, the epiphyseal plate, the label.
I look at diaphysis, epiphysis, epiphyseal plate, sometimes marrow cavity. So on the next page, 66, we're going to be looking here at two different kinds of bone tissue. You say, what? I know in lab you've been studying one type of bone tissue, right? Okay, and the type you've been studying is called compact bone. Its alternate name is osseous tissue, but in fact there's actually a different kind called spongy bone. We sometimes call it cancellous tissue. Okay, so what I'd like to do is talk to you about the compact bone, since we're already familiar with that one to begin with. Compact bone is that smooth bone tissue you feel on the outside of those bones circulating through class today. Those are the bones that have a very thin coat of compact on the outside, as do all of our bones. And so you can see the contrast here between smooth compact and that very needle-like and open spongy bone. That's a great way to put it. Looks like bread, yeah. Except it'll cut you. All right, number one on the top of page 66 is for osteocytes. Osteocytes are mature bone cells. Osteocytes are mature bone cells. When we're thinking about building some new bone, we have to have a blood vessel, that's what's here in orange, coming into our bone. That new blood vessel is going to be carrying some calcium to our bone. Well, these bone-forming cells called osteoblasts take that calcium out of the bloodstream and they start laying calcium around themselves. So what they do is they have a little air pocket there that they're trapped in, and then that's what? Lacuna, good. And then they start building these layers of calcium around themselves, okay? And so, unfortunately, if they get stuck in that little hole there, then they're trapped there, and what do they become?
Osteocytes.
Osteocytes, yeah. So imagine this. Imagine building your home and putting up some drywall, and then the next thing you know is you put it up wrong, and now you're trapped inside the wall. And that's where you spend your life as an osteocyte, is trapped inside the wall. And people feel sorry for you, but not so sorry that they'll take the wall down. So they cut a hole, and then they hand you food. Okay? That's how an osteocyte lives its life. Trapped inside. It used to be an osteoblast. It used to be a builder. But now it's trapped in the wall, the matrix there of that bone tissue. Kind of a sad story. Okay. So number two, the matrix. Number two is the matrix. The matrix of your bone is made up of calcium salts, which are very strong. They're only strong because we combine them with collagen fibers for strength. And in this picture, you're looking at rings of the matrix called lamellae. Anybody else want to see bones?
All right, thank you.
Okay, so number two is the matrix. The matrix is calcium salts. It's arranged in circles called lamellae. I don't know any grocery store but Walmart that carries the oxtails, but if you've ever seen the oxtails for sale in the store, you know what I'm talking about. They have this really cool setup because they've got these rings of lamellae that are visible to the naked eye. So normally you would need a microscope to be able to see them, but you know, now you've got two reasons to go to Walmart, right? Look for the skeleton, and now check out the oxtails. Yeah, really cool. So these rings here are calcium salts. The darkened spots are our osteocytes. They're the mature bone cells that are trapped in that matrix. And like you told me before, the little air pocket that osteocyte is trapped in is called lacuna. Good. I totally agree. Some people say it looks like an owl's eye, tree rings, all great things to keep in mind. Good. So let's talk about what is in bone tissue. About two-thirds of your bone tissue are these calcium crystals with a really fancy name. They're called hydroxyapatite crystals. I don't know, it sounds like something that would make me lose weight. Take the new hydroxyapatite, right? Hydroxycut or something like that, yeah. These crystals are mostly calcium and phosphorus. Let me take you back to something we talked about in class on Monday. On Monday, we talked about vitamin D. It's actually vitamin D3. How do you make it?
Sunlight.
Sunlight, yeah. Okay, so if you sit in the sun for like 15, 30 minutes a day, you make vitamin D3, which is also called calcitriol. Calcitriol deposits calcium and phosphorus to your bones. So sunlight is related to bone health. How cool is that? So, you know, we were talking about staying indoors and not getting sunlight exposure. You can also get vitamin D3 in another way from
milk.
Yeah, milk products contain vitamin D3 as well. These crystals by themselves are kind of like chalk. They're brittle, but they could be strong if we combine them with something else. So let's combine those crystals with collagen fibers. They form about a third of the bone. How would you describe a collagen fiber?
They're
rope-like. They're very strong. They're very tough. They do take a long time to grow.
White.
And what?
They're white.
They're white. Good. And they're actually going to be good for avoiding the twisting actions that our bones experience and helping to provide flexibility. Okay. So when you take these two things together, collagen fibers for flexibility, and you combine that with hydroxyapatite crystals for, you know, the strength of your bone, now you've got a good setup. If you happen to have a disorder, where you have too little of one or the other, then we run into issues. You ever heard of, let's see, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome? People double jointed? Very double jointed. Okay. If someone is very, very double jointed and has great deals of flexibility in their joints, they may be missing collagen fibers. And that also affects their bones. So how does that influence bone strength?
Weak.
Yeah. Weak bones, so they're not necessarily as strong as they should be, right?
Don't you say that people that are double jointed are more prone to arthritis and all too later?
Yeah, more prone to arthritis, more prone to bone fractures, exactly. Yep. Brittle bone disease, similar problem, collagen fiber issues, okay? So we have all sorts of issues here where you have problems with either the crystals or problems with the collagen fibers. So either way, you know, you're looking at the bone not being all that it potentially could be if you have missing parts there. Okay, so you'll want to mark on your sheet that the crystals, the calcium and phosphorus, make up the majority of your bone's strength. And the collagen fibers are the ones that provide the flexibility. That is a potential essay question. Okay, so you'll want to mark the crystals and the collagen fiber. Looking at what they do, that's a potential essay question. It won't hurt looking in your book. They give you more details than we've talked about here, so that's a great way to kind of back up and strengthen your question if you do answer that on the test.
Specifically about the collagen fibers and the crystals?
I would look at what each
flexibility and
yeah, flexibility for the collagen and strength and support for the crystals. Okay. The question's going to ask you something like, what does each component contribute to bones? They may have collagen fiber issues, different levels of deficiency in collagen, so their bones may not have the flexibility that they should need. Yeah. Doing so far so good? Got any questions on anything? So let's talk about the canals that feed and nourish the bone cells that are living trapped in these sad little air spaces. So we know that there's osteoblasts and osteoclasts and osteocytes, but it's those osteocytes that we're going to try to keep alive because they're the ones trapped in that bone matrix, okay? So let's talk about the central canal first. I'll do this a little out of order for you. Let's do central canal first. Looking at central canals, they're the darker spots, okay? And each of these is going to be home to a blood vessel or a nerve. You know, bone has a great source of blood. This blood brings in calcium, or alternately, it picks up calcium and it carries it away. So this has a very vascularized set of canals running through with blood vessels. Likewise, these may contain nerves. You know, of course, breaking a bone is painful, so there's a nerve supply here, there's also a blood supply here. So that central canal is in the middle of something called an osteon. The osteon is actually a collection of rings of calcium salts that go around that central canal. What type of bone-forming cell built those rings?
Osteoblasts.
Osteoblasts. Yeah, they built the rings, and when they got trapped in those rings, they became osteocytes, right. I'll put a couple of our osteocytes here sitting in little air pockets. Yeah, those are lacunae. Good, let's label those. All right. right, so we know the central canal carries some blood, and that blood is going to be distributed out through our little tiny cells by way of itty-bitty canals. So now I'm going to go back and show you this picture. This has the weirdest word on it. A canaliculus is a little tiny canal that carries blood and nutrients and oxygen out to those individual cells. These canaliculi are going to link back up to your central canal. So what we're looking at is little teeny tiny canals radiating out. These little canals here are our canaliculi. I think this looks like a bloodshot eyeball.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those radiating lines that come out from the center, those are little canals called canaliculi. It sounds dirty, doesn't it? Can I lick you live? Now you won't forget that word, right? It's a weird word. Okay, so looking back at that big picture, you know there's more than just one osteon set up in that picture. An osteon is the canal, all those rings around it, the osteocytes, the rings of calcium salts, the lamellae. But, you know, back it out to a bigger picture, like this one here, and you see a central canal and a set of rings, another set of central canals and rings. So you see lots and lots of these all sitting packed together to make up compact bone. They don't sit individual and not communicate. You'll notice every now and again, there is a perforating canal that carries information or blood back and forth between those two central canals. So if we take and put another osteon up here, let's put one down here, another central canal. Let's put more lamellar rings around it. What we're going to do now is connect those two with a canal. That connecting canal is called what?
Perforating.
Perforating, right? It's called a perforating canal, otherwise known as a Volkmann's canal. Let's say that we have two high-rise buildings, okay? I've got one high-rise building here, and I've got another high-rise building next door. If I take the elevator up one high-rise building, I'm riding in a canal that runs the length of that building, and I have a set of offices that surround me in that building. What kind of canal am I riding as I go up the elevator? A central canal, yeah. And my adjacent building also has elevators. Those are central canals as well. And then sometimes in big cities, you see those really cool bridges that go across the street, that kind of bridge like that. Catwalks, yeah, what are those called?
Perforating
canals. So they connect my two towers together. Let's say that I ride up to the 23rd floor on one of my towers. And on the 23rd floor, I wind my way through a very small hallway called a
canaliculi,
right, and I end up at a specific office, and that's home to a osteocyte. You got it. So
kind of feels like you're more like a prison or something.
You are in a prison if you're an osteocyte. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So just to repeat, that term osteon down there is basically a set of rings around a central canal. It's just one setup, like you see here. You've got a central canal, these lamellae rings, the osteocytes embedded there, and this is the functional unit of a piece of compact bone tissue. And so we've got lots and lots of osteons that we see repeated over and over. Hey, you're not going to see osteons in spongy bone tissue. Spongy bone is a little different. It looks more like this needle-like, or like you said, bread, kind of an open, airy, needle-like appearance. And so this spongy bone, or cancellous bone, is built from bony bars that provide strength, called trabeculae. That, by the way, is your blank near the bottom of the page, trabeculae. So you don't see the osteons here. You don't see the setup that we have with compact bone. The canals aren't necessary here. So we're looking at a totally different setup in spongy bone. And in those air spaces, what we think of as air spaces, is where bone marrow is housed. If it's red in nature, what is the function of that bone marrow?
Make blood cells.
Make blood cells, good. And if it's yellow?
Stores
fat, good. Let's see, I'm trying not to get you so far ahead, because if I get you really far ahead, then we're studying muscles before you even take test number two. So I'm looking at page 68, 69, and 71. That's three pages to finish on Monday. You know, I could potentially go ahead and get you through articulations, because I know that's on your lab test next Wednesday. So I know you would like to hear that before your lab test. So let's plan on doing articulations on Monday. And then Wednesday of next week, let's plan on doing skeletal muscle tissue just a little bit, and then we'll do test, of course, that following week. So that seems like the game plan for next week then. Thinking about that, I think we'll just call it a day, be done a little bit early today, and then we'll pick up with the last of the chapter. Yay, right? And articulations come Monday. Okay?